Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, modern guru, my good buddy, Great Nate. What's up, Nate?
What's up, Curtis? How's everybody doing?
Doing well. So Cameron kind of had to work suddenly this weekend, so he won't be joining us. It's just you and me rapping about Modern. Last week, we went very deep on Legacy, and this week we're going to give that other format some attention, right?
Your favorite one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, not your favorite one.
I mean, I like it more than Commander.
That's saying a lot.
But no, there's a lot to cover, and I feel like the last 2 weeks we haven't dug deep on kind of the future of Modern. That's been a big discussion kind of in the podcast realm. But I also want to kind of talk about our weeks. First, let's start with you, because you've been you went on hiatus. You had yourself a child.
Yep, been making some babies.
And now you're making some videos.
Yeah, I'm back at it. I've done two leagues, and the format that I'm currently working with is I just release one round a day. That way, you know, it you don't have to try and watch like 5 hours of Magic all at once. You can watch the 20 to 40 minute video on Monday, come back Tuesday. I've done that 2 weeks in a row, and I plan to continue for the foreseeable future.
So, no shock to anyone, but for those people that haven't been listening for a while or watched your videos, describe them and kind of what you specialize in.
Yeah, so pretty much it's just Jeskai stuff. I would say mostly Jeskai midrange. It's either going to be some variant of like a Jeskai flash deck, or Jeskai Geist is what I'm really known for playing. I really like turning Geist of St. Traf sideways and hitting for 6 for 3 mana. It's a fantastic feeling. But I also will dabble in some other stuff like Esper Drago, Jeskai Drago, Jeskai Nahiri, Mono Blue, Tron, something with blue in it, most likely. And no nasty green creatures, because, I mean, they're dirty. They're kind of gross. They smell.
Okay. And how?
I'd play Tarmogoyf. I'd play Tarmogoyf if I had to, though, but only if it had, like, blue cards in it.
That seems like that would be the smelliest of green creatures. Just putting that out there. But talk to me about the format, because we haven't really chatted since the last round of bannings. Mm-hmm. And so the metagame has kind of shifted around a lot in the past week. We've seen Death Shadow Jund emerge kind of, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but from obscurity to the deck that is getting the most ink on the various mm-hmm. websites. What do you think of the metagame now, and are you happy with the bans that occurred?
Yeah, and I think that the bans were completely fine and justified. I really like that Wizards of the Coast, with regards to Golgari Grave Troll, was willing to say, hey, you know what, you guys think, you know, the pulse is that card's fine to unban. We want to try to unban things. And I like that they were willing to try to unban something that was a little bit, you know, kind of in the gray area as far as we think it's safe, but we're not sure. And then come back later and say, okay, we tried it. It's totally busted. We're going to have to ban it again. And, I mean, the downside is bans are terrible. But if you're playing Modern, you're probably invested enough to know that having it become rebanned is something that's likely to happen. And the people, I think, that went and got Golgari Grave Trolls once they were unbanned probably knew that it could happen. And the other thing is Dredge is still, you know, I think it's, of course, it's a little less powerful, but I still think it's a completely reasonable strategy in Modern. I mean, just because it's, you know, only 88% as good as it was doesn't mean it's not still really good. And then on the Gitaxian Probe side, I have thought that that spell should be banned for a long time. It's just, you know, if it said, look at target player's hand, don't draw a card, like for free, mm-hmm. maybe that would have been fine. But just drawing a card, like, you know, there was a time when I almost considered like just running a 64 card deck with 4 Gitaxian Probes just because it's basically just a free card. And basically the idea was you'd be able to just play it for free, gain information, and cantrip to whatever the card that was underneath it would have been anyway. And actually the reason I didn't do it was in testing, it negatively affected your mulligan decisions to poorly, because yeah, you may have a Gitaxian Probe, but is that next card really a land or not? So it wasn't completely free from that perspective, but just drawing a card and getting perfect information for relatively zero cost, I think is just, it's too good. It always has been too good. And there were many times I wanted to play it in my fair decks just because it seemed incredibly powerful to be like, well, should I play this Geist of St. Traff now or not? I know. Let me pay two life and find out. Mm-hmm. So those are my thoughts on the bannings. And then as far as modern, I think, I don't know if I'm different than other people, but unless we have a situation where something like Eldrazi Tron, or maybe Dredge might have been a good candidate. I'm pretty much always think the format is more or less fine in that it'll find a way.
Yeah, it's kind of been interesting. So the way that the metagame is boiled down, the decks have just kind of adopted or altered themselves in such a way to where they're still viable, right? Death Shadow's mm-hmm. gone under a massive change, but still... I mean, people say, oh, it's Death Shadow Jund, not Death Shadow Zoo. Okay, well, it's still... some of those cards are different, but some of them are not. You know, it's still functioning in such a way where it can kill you with Team or Battle Rage and Death Shadow, which is still a pretty strong in-game. Whereas, you know, in fact, I I'm not the biggest fan of the G-Pro ban because of what it disabled, but I think what somebody... I think it was Spencer Howland said, and I totally would... cosign is, if you got rid of G-Probe and gave us Preordain, I think that would have been a much more interesting shift in the metagame, because Probe does enable a lot of unfair things, but the problem is that they've already kind of find a way to alter around that. And I even thought there's no way Storm could recover from G-Probe being banned, and now Storm is actually better than it's ever been in the format, outside of maybe the first month, because of Baral and Gifts Ungiven and those things. So all these decks have kind of adapted, so I think it's somewhat healthy. I do think that there is a chance that we see more bans in Modern within this next year. What that card will be, I don't know. But I do think Wizards is very unafraid to tinker with the format, right? And they have a player base and a culture that has that understanding, that they know that that can happen, right? Half the time I listen to Modern podcasts, they are talking about the ban. So everyone's very aware of what's going on, you know? I'm still in the unbanned camp. There was a pretty good conversation on Twitter this week about unbanning Jace. I completely think that would be fine. What's your thoughts on that, man? Are you in the pro or anti Jace the Mind Sculptor in Modern?
I would say I'm certainly in the pro, from the standpoint that, you know what, and I feel like Wizards should maybe, when they have their banned, when they unban things, I think that they should also include some language that kind of gave players some idea of how sure or like how sure they felt that this ban would this unban would stick or not. Like, what I'm really trying to say is, I think they should unban Jace, and I think it should come with some language that's like, hey, we're gonna try this, you know, and if it becomes a problem, we want everybody to be aware that we may readdress it, right? But we're giving this a try because, you know, blue control does look like it could use some help. We've unbanned Ancestral Visions. Hardly any decks play it. It doesn't, you know, you have outside of like the guys that are known for playing certain decks, like you have Corey Burkhart with Grixis Control. You have, you know, like, I mean, not that I'm, you know, at the level of somebody like Corey Burkhart, but, you know, I'm going to play some version of a Jeskai deck. And then you have a few people that are sort of known for playing these strategies. You don't see a lot of people picking up these decks, even though, you know, they unban something like Ancestral Visions. So, and just real quick, I also wanted to, I don't want to jump too far away from the Jace thing, but going back to the metagame thing, there was something I wanted to comment on. If you actually followed the metagame really closely, like I was, over the last 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it's been since the unbanning, there was this really interesting, there's this like cyclical thing that's happened where actually some of the Tron decks really rose to combat a lot of these Abzan and Jund decks that were playing Fatal Push. Mm-hmm. And then when that happened, that's also at the time when Burn started coming back up, and then these Death Shadow decks started coming back, and then that sort of pushed Tron down a bit, which then also had an impact on Abzan. And so there has been this sort of roller coaster of when this does well, then this gets pushed out. When that gets pushed out, this, you know, this sort of cyclical nature. So I think that that's good to see, right? You kind of want that, right? You want everything to sort of be viable depending on how, where the metagame is in its cycled, in its cyclical nature. But yeah, I think they should unban Jace. I think they should give it a shot. And I don't know what decks would play it. I imagine you build around it. But what's kind of interesting about Jace is, like, I ran three Ancestral Vision in the sideboard right now. And I find that what's really great about Ancestral is, yeah, you don't want it against a lot of decks because it's really slow. But there's a lot, when you finally get to face off against GBX, it feels like I finally have the tool to help in that matchup. Mm-hmm. It's like, sure, you can rip my hand apart, but if I go turn one AV, you better end the game really quickly because I'm gonna claw my way back into this matchup. And that's something that you were never able to do in the past without landing maybe something like a Kuranos, but, you know, they only had like five turns to Thoughtseize it out of here.
Right.
So yeah. What I was going to say is I think that even if you're not building around Jace, it's just inherently like a good enough card that you could just have a couple in a lot of blue deck sideboards, and it's going to help in a lot of areas.
Right. I think that sometimes people get caught up in a card's life cycle and standard and automatically apply how it oriented itself in standard to a different metagame. And the truth is, and I genuinely believe this, that in modern, Jace would be probably exactly as good as Liliana of the Veil, right?
I think so. And I mean, you also have to remember, when you look at how Jace existed then, or like take Legacy, you can draw a lot of comparisons, but what I'm trying to say is, if you look at Delver, why is Delver not as good in Modern as he is in Legacy? I mean, discount the fact that, you know, sure, you have Brainstorm and the Delver decks only have to run like 19 lands. Bolt is oftentimes the most played card in the modern format. So, yeah, Delver's just not going to be good. Well, you know what? Jace is going to die to, like, if you brainstorm with Jace and he gets bolted, you paid a lot for a very powerful effect, but that Jace is now gone. And so you're probably, because of that, you're going to see maybe a lot of people that are going to plus it to begin with. And so that effect isn't nearly as scary. And what was I going to say? Oh, now you're just in this position of, okay, now, just like you are sometimes with Liliana, which is like, okay, now I have a Planeswalker that I can't bolt out of the game. How do I get rid of it? That's not that much different than a Liliana that's at four. That's just upticking. Now you have a Jace at what is going to be five. And it's like, both of those situations die to a double bolt, but you're also like, well, how do I deal with a Planeswalker? That's what you deal today with Liliana. And then the last thing I wanted to say is that even sounds way less scary than a Resolve Nahiri that pluses. Because if you Resolve Nahiri and plus, I'm like, oh God, I got to deal with this right now, right? Because the game's going to be over. Mm-hmm. And that is arguably worse than, okay, you Fate Sealed me. It's kind of annoying. Or maybe you Fate Sealed yourself. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah. And like the presence of two major Reality Smasher decks in the format also affect Jace's quality. Like, we could go on and on, but the point is, I think it will be fine. Last thing I want to mention before we jump back into Modern, because that's certainly going to happen, is I don't want to turn this into a complaint session about MTGO, but MTGO did have an oopsie this week. I set aside several ticks for their flashback standard. It was going to be Tempest Mirage Era standard throwback gauntlet. And I was rubbing my hands together, man. I was like, Wednesday night, told my wife.
That sounds like something you'd be into.
Oh,
for sure.
My God. I was so ready. I was so ready. Mm-hmm. I'd read all the deck list. I was like, please, please let me end on the Cadaverous Bloom deck. Please let that happen. And I mean, so at my job, I can't access Twitter. I don't have like phone signal. And I get in my car, take it off airplane mode, and I see the announcement, like, right off the bat, hey, guys, we've closed down the standard gauntlet because of bugs. And I was like, oh. So I get home, and triple cons draft is what they've used to replace it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've never liked that format. On paper, I should love it. I love Morph. I love gold sets. But there's just something about it that I just can't put my finger on. I remembered that I didn't like it, but I couldn't remember why. It's like a Creed album. You remember that you don't like it, but you can't exactly remember what specifically you found so annoying about them. And then I put it on. I'm on these like super long grindy matchups. Like everything is just mid-range garbage in these. Like it's just so low synergy. And then I had a bug. And I had to do a bug report, and I got reimbursed. So like it's fine. But the whole thing just felt like, okay, give me Magic Digital next. I'm like ready for this, you know? Because that was
maybe.
That was a terrible experience. Like having like a bug and then having to like grind through it. Basically, they ended up giving me an extra match in the draft, and then the bug still existed, and so then I got reimbursed. So it was just like such a grind, man. But
it's funny, man. You know, is Magic Online has gotten a lot better.
Oh,
I'd
yeah.
say the beta, this version 4 client than it was when I first was forced to use it. I mean, for the most part,
it's stable.
I get online. I play my games. I have my decks. There's a few annoyances, like for a year now, my promo Lightning Helixes are blue or white, and my promo Bolts are blue, and there's this weird like promo full art color bug that just fix it. It looks unprofessional, but for the most part, it completely does its job, and I'm fine with it. But there are still times when it's like, you know, I saw recently that they, maybe that's the event you're talking about, they had to like take Magic Online down for an emergency patch, and it's just like it's gotten a lot better, but I don't know if it's their QA process. They're still just like going to, you know, I'm in enterprise IT. They're still going to production with these bugs that should have very easily been caught, and I don't understand why. I don't know if Magic Digital Next will fix it. I'm not even sure what Magic Digital Next is going to be. I mean, I'm kind of with everybody in like what's going to happen to my collection on Magic Online. I mean, I think it's going to be fine. I can't imagine that they're going to want to disenfranchise any of their players. That would just be a stupid business decision. And if nothing else, WotC has always, I think, at least demonstrated that they care about
enfranchised
their player
players.
Base. Just look at the reserve list, man. That thing just needs to go away, and they will not get rid of it. So, and that's just there is a mountain of money waiting for them if they can like reprint Eternal Masters. I mean, a mountain, and they won't do it. So yeah, Magic Online, Digital Next.
Well, hey, I don't know exactly what will happen, but I was just kind of like, man, I got off my work. I worked extra hard, so I wouldn't have any work in the evening. I just want to sit down.
And it's a bummer.
Yeah, and it just like, it totally popped the balloon of my joy is what I'm trying to tell you. So look, hey, we have waxed poetic a little bit about kind of modern and stuff, but I want to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the future of competitive modern, and I want to get your insights. We'll be right back. All right, Nate. So welcome back. We are going to talk very, very quickly about not so much specific decks or the metagame. I'm more interested in the future of competitive modern. That's been a huge discussion in the past 2 weeks. Ever since they kind of announced that, you know, PTQs on the Sundays of Grand Prix would mostly be standard. The World Magic Cup qualifiers would be standard. Basically, a lot of emphasis, it appears as though, is going to be on standard for competitive Magic going forward. And, you know, the Pro Tour is obviously not modern.
I was going to say, this is all sort of all on top of that as well.
Right.
The
so modern Pro Tour. I just want your insights, man, as somebody that's heavily invested in the format, that makes content for the format. What do you want for competitive Magic? If you were in charge of WotC, what do you think they should do?
What I think that they should do is I think it's first and foremost, every Magic player should be in alignment with WotC's business decisions on this is what we need to do for the bottom line. You know, they have these pre-existing marketing vehicles, if you want. You know, the Pro Tour is a marketing vehicle for Magic the Gathering, and so they want people to buy standard. And so, you know, to say what you will about the fact that, you know, there's no modern Pro Tour, basically if WotC just said, hey, look, we want it all to be standard because that's a revenue maker for us and we need that. Okay, fine. And I want Magic to make money. I want more people to get into the game. Ultimately, the more people that get into the game, the more people that are get into modern. All that being said, I think modern from a player base is probably in an extremely healthy place. And that's also probably why they've said, okay, we've built modern up where we want it. We have our bought in player base, and now we're going to sort of I don't want to say rest on our laurels, but we're going to let that vehicle coast for a while. However, I think it's really important just to sort of – I think what they need to do is they need to have at least one annual relatively large competitive modern event that receives, like, honestly really good coverage, because I think that that sort of keeps – that lights people's fire for the format, right? People want to see their pet deck, their favorite deck. They want to see it played at really high levels. And, you know, you have the Grand Prix. But I do think I saw it mentioned somewhere, like, what if they had, like, a, you know, Masters of Modern type tournament where you took, like, the Modern Grand Prix, the top number of finishers or something, maybe people from Magic Online, and you were able to sort of assemble, like, this large format. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that's really expensive. And you'd have to find a way. It can't just be an expense, right? Mm. From a business standpoint, you can't just have something that has no ROI. So you'd have to be able to prove that if they did this, it's going to make them enough money. Maybe they do it preceding one. Like, maybe even if it was only every couple of years, I think that would be too long. But what I was going to say is if it was just after, like, one of their Modern Masters things, I think that or just before, you know, that could potentially be – you could improve that return on investment idea. I don't know how they do it on the business end, but I think that it's just important. It would be important to have something, because that piques people's interest. That gets people who aren't interested in modern interested in modern. I think that would be, at least from a player standpoint, I'd like to see something like that.
So here's what I think should happen. So first of all, let's just spitball this idea a little bit. Let's refine it because we're totally on the same page. Annually, let's say July, in Seattle, Wizards host the top 124 modern players chosen through Grand Prix results, PT results, Magic Online, whatever qualifications that they want. And they don't even have to do the plane ticket thing. They could just invite people, right?
Sure.
Maybe the tournament's bigger than that. I don't know. But like you said, do coverage the right way. And one of the best ways to reduce coverage expense, I would think, is just have it in Seattle, right? That has to be one of the biggest expenses whenever you set up a pro tour that's in another country and set up coverage for that. There's no way that that's cheap. There's just no way. And so setting yourself up, maybe you want a cheaper place. I don't know. Come to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. That would be great. But the point being is if you just have annual modern champs and it's something for the competitive modern structure to gear itself towards, and someone says, hey, they finished fifth at Modern Champs. That identifies that person with a certain level of prestige. And like you said, what if we did that a week before a Master Set comes out? Right? And then, you know, you do it annually, yeah. But obviously the Master Set's every other year. So, okay, the other year, it's just in July, and that's fine. You're going to sell packs. You're going to promote the format. The other thing that needs to happen, and everyone that saw the Star City Games team thing agrees. Now, look, they're never going to put Legacy on the PT stage. Ever, ever, ever. But if they had the three-person team and it was modern, standard, sealed, and the three-man teams, I think everybody would watch that. I would love that, right? And maybe then you wouldn't feel that pressure to ban cards because it's not the sole format that exists, right? It also, a lot of this discussion has kind of come out of the fact that standard is just terrible right now. Terrible. It's more expensive than it should be. The gameplay is not good. I don't know if you've spent any time with standard lately, Nate, but
none, zero.
Oh man, it is brutal. I bought a standard deck on Magic Online. I ran it through the leagues, and the fourth out of fifth game that I had my opponent cast Winding Constrictor, I was just like, you know what? What am I even doing here? This is silliness. And so,
A, don't even know what that card is. B, isn't that format supposed to be much better now since they just banned all the bad stuff?
We can talk about this later, but I think I genuinely think the bans were not good outside of Smuggler's Copter. I think Reflector Mage would have been a great safety valve for some of the stuff that's going on, but, you know, whatever. Whatever. They just decided to do what they wanted to do, and that's they need to ban some more things for it to be healthy. But, you know, the reason that Modern is so popular is you can't justify, if you're not playing competitively or at a weekly event, the cost of standard, right? And so Modern becomes a great avenue for that. Almost everybody I know that's a heavy-duty Modern player at one point was a heavy-duty standard player and said, you know what? I don't want to have to keep going through this. I just want to play this one format.
That's exactly why I You know what? I got into Modern because I got tired of cards rotating. You know, I was, I had other things to do. I was a working professional, and you know, I had actually gotten married, and I had more things. You know, I had more obligations outside of the game, and there were times when it's like I can't really play for 4 months. And if that 4 months happened to be like during a rotation, it was like, oh, I still have my deck, but A, it's not legal anymore, and all, and I didn't have time to trade out on all the cards, so I've lost a lot of value. And so I was like, I'm just done with this. You know, this was right after I still had all of my standard cards from the last Return to Ravnica set when they were playing like Jeskai, and I had Geist of St. Traffs and, you know, Sphinx's Revelations. And I realized that there was a deck in Modern that, it, you know, you basically ported a lot of it over. And so that's what I did.
Yeah. And there's still money to be made out of guys like you. It's just not in the structure of the standard rotation, right?
No, I agree completely. And, you know, the thing is when you have, like, one of these competitive events we're talking about, I think it just further entrenches the people that are already in it. Because you know, I don't know if I would ever play on a Pro Tour. I went to an RPTQ, and if I hadn't made a stupid last-minute decision to take out Aven Mind Sensors and then play against Titan Shift, not even Titan Shift, I'm sorry, the old Amulet Bloom deck, like, three times... Mm-hmm. To which I had had like a 60% win rate against on Magic Online because I had Aven Mind Sensors. If I hadn't made that punt, maybe I might have played on a Pro Tour. And so you can give these a lot of people these really far stretched goals that maybe they'll never get there, maybe they will, but it's at least something. It's at least a goal to have, and it's something to shoot for, and it's something to enjoy watching the people who played it. It just, I think it further it just further solidifies people's commitment to a format. And I'm sorry if you have however many millions of people play Modern committed to your product, there's a way to make money there. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a way to make money there. There is a business proposition. You just got to find it.
Yeah. And again, it just takes a little bit of going outside your comfort zone. I completely agree. And the scary thing is we have a case study of them letting a format wither, and that's Legacy, right?
That's the one thing I wanted to mention is, so in theory, right, like you could pull all coverage of competitive Modern stuff and say Modern's really healthy, we don't need it anymore. But you know what? I think you start to have a slow year-over-year reduction because it's just not getting the coverage. Just like it, think of Modern as a sub-game within a game. You need an influx of people. Mm-hmm. Because you're constantly going to have people leaving. And these events with coverage, that's the way that you get players into that format. And so you figure out how to make money from it, and then you put at least something, if it's just annually on top of whatever GPs you have, that's fine. But you make sure that you have that little siphon turned on that constantly trickles new people in.
Yeah, and I think the big problem with this kind of very aggressive standard structure that they built, and look, I will be the first to admit, WotC needs standard to work to be financially viable. They need to do that, and I get it, and that's great. But that doesn't mean you abandon the people that are playing Modern, and you have to be aware of the fact that and I genuinely believe this. Maybe this is just tinfoil hat, but I think it's true. As soon as you created the mythic rarity, you alienated some amount of people from standard. Because even if they have the financial capability to keep up with this, it just makes so much more sense to them to play in a non-rotating format. And granted, maybe it doesn't need to be on the Pro Tour a ton because that creates bans and it's hard to test for. I get all those things. But do something for those players. Don't let Legacy happen to Modern. Even though, hey, I have a ton of issues with Modern as a format. A ton. I really think that having some kind of non-rotating format that lives matters to the health of Magic.
You know, I remember when... again, going back to that time in Standard, which is, I guess,
it's been a few years.
I played that Standard, and then I played a little bit of Theros after, and that was it. I had a friend who loved green-white decks and just could not play them because Voice of Resurgence was $45. And so, and that was too high for him. Like, that was outside of his budget. He could not buy four $45 cards on top of everything else to build his deck. But you know what? He has Voices now, and part of that is because since these decks stick around, he's able to, like, slowly over time trade and save up some money, and he has some scalding. He has some of the things that he needs, and he's been able to buy through them over time, and that's something that you can do in modern that you can't do in standard a lot of times.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just been the difficult thing to kind of stomach, is they want standard to stay very expensive. And I know they've tried these other things like the expeditions or the treasure chest. The masterpieces. Thank you. So the masterpieces, they've tried to kind of reduce the cost of standard by making hyper raritanium cards exist, but that's not really positively affecting people, you know? And even if you talk to most card dealers, they're annoyed by the mythic rarity, because let's use Jace Vrince Prodigy as the example. When that was $80 or $90, they could not sell them, right? And it artificially limited the decks and the amount of people that were at FNM. And so, and now those people are trying to get Frontier started as a format because they just bought $360 worth of Jaces, right? And they're like, oh, what do I do? But all this kind of wraps around to, you need to support modern to some level, right? Whether it's...
I think there's a bare minimum level where you have enough coverage that continues to generate interest. Whatever that level is, that kind of keeps new blood coming in and invigorates the people that are already in, that's where you need to cheat. That's what you need to achieve. That's where you need to what you need to shoot for.
Yeah, put in some effort. Don't gaslight modern is what we're trying to tell you, right? So anyway, we've rambled for some time.
Yes.
I just want your final thoughts here on the potential for Magic Digital next, because I get this feeling in my gut that comes out, it's not going to support modern, that it's going to be standard first. And that seems likely just from an IT perspective too, right? Like programming 3 sets worth of cards versus programming 10 years worth of cards might be, you know, too much to ask from the outset, you know?
No, I mean, I'm in IT, from a standpoint of looking at this as a big project, it's like, well, what's their biggest revenue maker and so on and so forth? Well, it's standard. Those are your most critical requirements there. You know, meet those, release it being standard. I would not be surprised if when it first released it only supported standard. And I don't really know what next is going to be. I also saw they had like Duels of the Planeswalkers or whatever it's called now, Magic, whatever. I don't even know. I don't play it. Mm. They had that one as their entry level. And I saw like Digital Next slotted in between that and Magic Online. You also don't really want to have to support, you know, 3 digital products. It seems like you'd want to be able to solve all of your projects with one or all of these areas with one tool. You know, you don't want to have 3 different versions of Hearthstone. You don't want to have 3 different versions of World of Warcraft. I mean, this is just not something that people do. Mm-hmm. And so I maybe it comes out, only supports standard, and then over time, you know, incorporates the other formats and maybe Magic Online goes away. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
Yeah, and we both talked about this before the cast, but it seems like there's no way they're just going to like nuke people's collections, you know?
No, I can't. I saw a lot of people being fearful of that, and I just cannot imagine. You know, if there's one thing Wizards of the Coast has consistently, in my opinion, demonstrated that they care about, is the enfranchised player. That's sort of been like their bread and butter for a very long time. They want people to play the game. They really pay attention to how long people play. They love to tout that, you know, their customer has been playing their game for like, the average is like 10 or 12 years or whatever it is. They're definitely not looking to go and be like, oh, well, we're just trashing Magic Online. Sorry, bro. They're not going to do that, because it'd be like if they abolished the – well, I don't know. I'm going to say it's like if they abolished the reserve list, but there would be so much negative press around it, it would be a bad move for them.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised. Like, let's say they start standard only and they say, look, we have your collection on file. As those cards get released, like if they work backwards, and once they get to Lorwyn, all your Lorwyn cards would appear in your collection or something like that. You know, like it might not be an overnight like, hey, boom, you got everything. Here's your Moxes. It might be something that they have to work towards over time. But, I'm quietly hopeful for Magic Digital next. But, man, just being able to play something that's stable, that looks good, that is streamable, would be huge.
Yeah. I'm where I'm at on it is I'm just more curious, right? Because I'm probably one of the fewer people that's like, I'm pretty much fine with Magic Online. I don't need it to look like Hearthstone to have fun with it. It's... For the most part, it is a digital copy of the paper card game. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I have been whittling away so much of my paper collection. And I, not always, but a lot of, in a lot of areas, I kind of have this one-to-one mapping, and I really see Magic Online as like a digital extension of my paper cards that allows me to play with them more frequently. So I'm very curious to see what it's going to do for me, you know, the modern player. Just real curious.
Well, everybody's reporting that we're going to be hands-on with it before the end of the year. So that's something we'll keep our hands on or keep our eyes on. So, hey, let's get out of this segment and come back. We'll just talk about what else is going on with us this week. All right, Nate. So what's been going on with you this week? I wouldn't say outside of Magic, but not involving Magic as a community.
Well, so obviously, like I said, I've been making content, and as things have, I guess you could say, stabilized, or with my new son, and you know, the changes to our family and all that stuff. They're getting ready to be destabilized, by the way, because my wife's going back to work, and that's going to be a whole new thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've been wanting to play more Magic, and I've been thinking, I started thinking a lot about Magic, playing more Magic, and that's sort of what, you know, got me into, you know, kind of reaching back out to you, kind of saying, hey, man, you know, I'm back, you know, in the Magic world. I'd like to do some podcasts with you again and making videos again, all that kind of stuff. But part of that has been this this nagging sort of, I don't want to call it a splinter in my brain, but every time I log in and every time I look at my paper collection, I'm like, I have Legacy cards. What do I do with them? And I don't know. Like, I'm not one of these people that's fine to just have. I'm not a collector. Like, I have stuff because I want to use it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I don't just buy stuff to have stuff. I'm not really that kind of person. Like, I have games because I want to play them. I have a bicycle because I want to ride it. I have photography stuff because I like doing photography stuff. I don't really spend that much money outside of my hobbies, but the money that I spend on my hobbies is a good amount. But I don't feel good when I just have stuff that I'm not using, and that's where I'm at with my Legacy cards. I mean, I have invested in Tundras and Volcanic Islands, and I have probably, you know, I bought my Tundras, started buying my Tundras back when I was living in Hawaii, and I've already been here a year and a half. So I've owned Tundras for probably 2.5 years, and I probably played them in a grand total of like 7 paper tournaments, all of which have been pretty small. And most of which games at every single tournament I lost. Like, I don't know if you guys remember for the Spike Feed when I was making Legacy content, but it is a joke, man. I went to our local Legacy tournament about 3 weeks ago here, and I am not kidding. I lost every single match, and I think I lost – well, I think I won one game. And it's only because it was against, like, Reanimator – or it was only because I played against, like, a Reanimator deck, and I was like – I drew a hand of, like, turn one – Deathrite Shaman, 2 Surgical Extractions, and a Force of Will. And I was like, well, I guess I can win this game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't decide what to do with them online. It's just like I don't play, right? And then even when I do play, I'm not super in love with the format. I haven't found the deck for me. I really thought it would be Stoneblade. My problem with Stoneblade is just, like I was kind of telling Curtis before the show, like, you know, I'm known for playing Jeskai Geist in Modern. But I can very clearly tell you, like, these are all of my good matchups. These are the matchups that I love the deck in. These are the matchups that I dislike the deck in. And when I look at the Stoneblade list, it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't really know the format, but I can't identify any of the other decks. I'm like, I cannot wait till I play against deck X because I'm playing Stoneblade. Like, it just doesn't really seem to exist. And so then that led me down Grixis Delver. And that's fine. I just haven't really felt in love with the format, and it's just, I don't know what to do with it. I have so many thousands of dollars, you know, in a very small set of cards, right? Like Tundras and Underground Seas and Volcanic Islands and Force of Wills and Jaces, and they just sit there. And
well, don't do anything with the Jaces because I think they might appear in Modern at some point, right? But
right,
yeah, dude. I look, you're talking to a guy that at my peak I had 4 Legacy decks, and I've gone down to 1. I played once last year in paper. I'm probably going to play, thanks to these like really sweet tournaments, like the one we recorded from last week, that are popping up in my state, not in my major metropolitan area, but in the state that I live in, that I'm willing to drive to a couple hours each way. I'm playing it again, but I mean, I would tell you, man, if you can find value in something else and you can get a good deal for those cards, do it. I mean, I did really well with Esper Stoneblade at that SCG Open or SCG Classic, and I sold most of those cards away for Magic Online cards because I could not justify having them and not playing very often. Now, I will tell you, on Magic Online, Legacy is not in a good place. And I mentioned that before, but the league is like 200-some-odd players. The matches don't fire. I have better luck just playing in the tournament practice room, which is fine, but it's also like there's no stakes.
It's not really what you're there for.
Yeah, and then people play, you know, I play against bizarre things too often. But yeah, dude, I feel like if you don't have the love, don't do it, you know?
You really got to be into something and really enjoy it to be like, all right, you know, this deck is worth $3,500 and I know I'm only going to play it once a year or whatever the value is. I mean, just to have that much money into something and it's enough for you to know that you're only going to play it once or twice a year. And for me, I've tried, and for a while, this is going to sound so weird. I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, everybody talks about how Legacy is so amazing, and I'm supposed to love this. And I was like, it's not clicking with me. Something's wrong with me. And I don't know. You know, I think part of it is that I only have so much time to devote to Magic. And it feels like a big chore to me to learn a new format, to learn the intricacies. And I know them in Modern. But Legacy is just like, I don't know. I don't want to do it. I mean, I kind of want to, if I could find a deck I love that I felt was also like, pretty good, then maybe I could. And I just, I feel like it all hasn't converged for me. And so I might have to make the tough decision of letting some of that stuff go.
I would, just so it can find a good home, man. You know what I mean? Like, there's somebody out there that really wants that Tundra and is going to love it. And I don't know, man. Maybe if the format's not for you, that's fine. I mean, you're definitely wrong. And it's definitely a better format than Modern. But, you know, hey, do what you want. And I mean, like, I could literally play Legacy Maverick for two whole days, no problem.
Is that the deck you own now?
It is the lone Legacy deck that I play in paper. And it is not great in the format. I mean, it's better than it used to be thanks to Eldrazi showing up. But, you know, Esper Stoneblade is a deck that I love as well. It's kind of Legacy on hard mode. You know, there's a lot of you have to earn those wins. You know what I mean?
So you kind of heard me talking about, like, who – and I don't want to make this section too long, but what – if you're playing Esper Stoneblade, what do you really want to play against?
Creature decks.
And what is really so sad to – you know, what do you really want to play against, and what decks are like, oh, no, I'm playing against Stoneblade because I couldn't find them.
Creature decks. Yeah, so, like, anything that
– but nobody plays Zoo.
No, I'm not talking – I'm not Delver, Grixis Delver. I mean, I think I went 3-0 in that tournament against Grixis Delver. You know, those kinds of decks where they're attacking you. Lands can be kind of 50-50 depending on, I mean, it really depends on your ability to land a Jace. But obviously you don't have enough pressure. And then Miracles is like unwinnable. It is incredibly difficult to beat Miracles. But, you know, hey, that's going to happen. For example, you have to tilt the deck in such a way where it's good against combo elves, but you can definitely do that. And I did that. My one loss in the Swiss was to Storm because I took out almost all the counter magic. I played three forces and one spell pierce, you know? So there's all these little tuning things that happen. And the same is true with Maverick. But what I like about Legacy is I feel like there's all this intricacy to me tuning things. And that can exist in Modern with a deck like Jeskai, and I've been playing a lot of Grixis control, right? But like I'm trading into Bant Eldrazi, and I feel like there is
in Legacy or
in Modern, and I feel like there is two versions of that deck that are correct. You know, I feel like there's so little space to tune because it's such a solved thing, and the matchups are so much more set. So I just feel like it's about, you know, kind of where you're at in the format. Which, by the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about this too much, but playing Bant Eldrazi whenever you're used to playing Grixis Control feels like Modern on easy mode. It's like all of a sudden all these free wins happen, and you're like, what the heck? You know? Because it's just like, oh, hey, Thought Not Seer and a Reality Smasher, you're dead. Oh, well, oops. Dude, we're not supposed to talk about Magic in this segment. What the heck? But
Well, I will just say this, and we'll get out of it. And maybe, you know, maybe I can find a legacy deck that hits it for me, because I think where I've had the most success, and when I say success, it's partly wins and it's also just partly enjoyment, but it's to just play what I love and play what I like despite what anybody says. I've been playing like Jeskai mid-range decks my entire time in Modern. I still love them, and I have a great time with them. So if I can find that deck in legacy, maybe that'll do it for me. Anyway, this is an anti-magic segment, and I'm screwing it all up, so... What have you been up to?
I just want to just do a quick thing on VR, right? Because I want to alienate the maximum amount of listeners. Dude, so this week I got to use Google VR on Vive. It's going to eventually come to all the VR sets.
Yeah, I have an Oculus. I can't wait to try it.
And it is extremely, I'm about to sound very hippie, but it is extremely meditative. Now, not every place is vertically 3D. You know, a lot of, one of the first things I did was I teleported to a map of the Netherlands, because I lived there when I studied overseas, and you know, it's been 14 years, and so just kind of to go back to that campus and just be over it and like, oh, I remember when this was looked like this, or they were working on this town square, and it was like this, and my wife and I, we were just dating then, it was like this incredibly emotional moment to kind of like put myself back down on that street, you know. But there's these great like 3D places and things that you would think of, like, you know, the Eiffel Tower, the Statue of Liberty, where it's actually vertically put together. And there's one for Monument Valley in Arizona. And I just sat there all amongst all these plateaus in this beautiful desert. And it does have a sound, like they do natural kind of sounds. And you can just kind of absorb and chill for 5 minutes as you're floating. Right.
I got to try this. I want to try this. I've looked at Google Maps just, you know, like maybe it was Google Maps, Google Earth, one of the two. I guess it's all the same if you do like the satellite view. And I've zoomed in just on my computer and been completely blown away by like the fidelity of the 3D model. Like you get down to street level,
right?
And I find myself at, I'm like, how did they do that? I have no idea. But even the trees sometimes are like, it's nuts. I can't. I really want to check it out.
Yeah, and. You know, because, and it depends on your computer, of course, but if you're running VR, you probably already have a pretty decent graphics card, but it still takes forever to render areas. So a lot of times you kind of have to sit and watch it, kind of the details slowly filter in, because, I mean, we're talking about a ton of images being processed. But man, so if you know somebody that has a Vive, I mean, it is a free download, and it is completely worth your time. So, yeah.
Well, they just released, I just saw on the Oculus thing, they just released Tilt Brush, which is some Google thing for people who know how to paint, of which I am not one. And they said that stay tuned for Google Earth or whatever it is. So hopefully that will be something I can try soon.
Yeah, I mean, and we're both just total Kool-Aid drinkers on VR in general. I think if it's a luxury that you can spend some time with, you absolutely should. It's great. It's great. And not nearly, you know, I'm amazed at the amount of other adults I talk to that find it as a frightening thing, you know, and like they're worried that it's going to be, I don't know, too high quality or they're going to be too obsessed with it. It's like, no, it's just a new multimedia experience, you know, and it's worth checking out.
I've shown it to a lot of people and they, are amazed. In fact, you know, a couple quick stories about VR, this was in December, just before Christmas. My brother, who's never been to Europe, came to visit me here in Geneva, and we took a trip to Prague for 3 days. And it was awesome because, you know, being my brother, we don't see each other as much anymore, and now we're in our 30s, and life, you know, we're boring adults now. But we got to go, like, do a nice bro trip to Prague, a place we've never been, and it was super fun. But the day he got here, and maybe it's partly jet lag, I'm showing him the Oculus Touch demo, which is really, you know, they talk in VR about presence.
Yeah.
And you really hit it. You really hit it in that demo. And it's crazy to watch how intuitive it is for people to – they don't have to ask you how to play the game because it's all like you pick things up and you do things with your hands. And my brother, he's like trying to reach out to this little butterfly that's floating. And he tried to lean his hip on a table that was not there.
He fell over.
Just like that video you've seen. Yeah, he fell over and he hit his eye on these. My TV sits on these, you know, like foot and a half tall brown like trunks. They look like, you know, like an old school like box with a lid lifts up. Gave himself a black eye. and had that for like the remainder of his trip. It was totally hilarious and ridiculous, and I felt bad for him. But what was awesome was to watch my dad, who my dad is not a super technology guy. He just thought it was amazing. And the thing that he loved the most was this flight simulator flying around in an F-18 with this over this high resolution map of Switzerland. Like, I haven't seen my dad have such like a kid like reaction to anything in a long time. He just thought it was the coolest thing, and he's like, I want to get this. So yeah, it's fun stuff for sure.
Well, anyway, Nate, let's wrap up the show there.
All right, man.
Hey, so if somebody would like to get in contact with you or watch your videos, where can they find you?
Probably the easiest thing is go to greatnate.com, and that'll link you to like my Twitter and my YouTube and all that stuff, greatnate.com.
I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.